As always, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak to the journalists covering our region and through you to the people in our district. This morning, I'm going to focus on regional economic conditions with a particular attention to the housing sector here in the Second Federal Reserve District, which covers New York, Northern New Jersey, Fairfield County, Connecticut, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. My colleagues will follow with their own remarks and provide more detail. As always, what I have to say reflects my own views and not necessarily those of the Federal Open Market Committee or the Federal Reserve System. So to start, to provide context, let me talk a bit about national economic conditions. As I discussed in a recent speech, the long and deep recession that ended in June 2009 has been followed by a tepid recovery. Since June 2009, economic activity has grown, but only slowly from levels far below the productive capacity of the economy. In recent months, the momentum of the recovery has slowed. For example, after rising at about a 3.25% annual rate during the second half of 2009, there's been a progressive slowing to 2.75% during the first half of 2010. And when we get the third quarter real GDP numbers at the end of this month, we'll likely see even slower growth in the third quarter. With demand growth only barely keeping pace with firms' ability to increase their productivity, job creation has been too weak to reduce the unemployment rate, which today stands at 9.6%. And it's typical in such circumstances of considerable excess slack in the economy, the inflation rates decline. Viewed through the lens of the Federal Reserve's dual mandate, that is, the pursuit of the highest level of employment consistent with price stability, the current situation is wholly unsatisfactory. Given the outlook that the upturn appears likely to strengthen only gradually, it will likely be several years before employment and inflation return to levels consistent with this dual mandate. So why are we experiencing this soft patch now? I think there are several reasons. First, as typical during the early stages of recovery, the economy has benefited from a strong inventory cycle over the past four quarters. The swing in inventories from liquidation back to restocking contributed about 1.75% of the 3% growth rate we've seen over the last four quarters. But this effect is temporary and is now petering out. Second, the growth impulse from the 2009 fiscal stimulus package is beginning to wane. And third, the usual handoff from the inventory-led growth to private final demand-led growth is not yet fully established. Instead, we've had ongoing sluggishness in two key sectors that typically lead economic recoveries, consumer spending and housing. The slow recovery of consumer spending and housing in the face of very substantial monetary and fiscal stimulus reflects the painful unwinding of the dynamics at work during the expansion that preceded this recent recession. Beginning around 2003, underwriting standards for residential mortgages were significantly relaxed, leading to a sharp rise in household borrowing and in home prices. The rise in home prices helped to support additional demand for credit as households used the collateral represented by their homes to borrow large sums of money via home equity lines of credit and via second mortgages. This also fueled a strong boom in home construction, but home price increases could not be sustained without limit. When home prices peaked and started to turn down, the dynamic linking home prices, credit, and consumption went into reverse, forcing substantial adjustments on the household sector and in the housing market itself. I've discussed in recent speeches the role monetary policy and regulatory policy can play in helping support economic activity and improving economic outcomes compared to what they would be in the absence of such support. These steps include critical reforms that make the financial system safer and an accommodative monetary policy that makes mortgages more affordable and makes investments that create jobs more attractive. Today, I'm going to focus on the economic trends themselves. First, let's consider the consequences of this dynamic for consumer spending, in other words, households' purchases of goods and services. Families' expenditures have risen only at about a 2% annual rate during the first half of 2010, and that sluggishness seems like to have continued into the third quarter. As a result, families have not yet boosted their spending back to the peak reached during the last expansion. This frugality stands in marked contrast to the first year of recovery from prior deep recessions. Now, several factors are responsible for this that are inhibiting families from spending. Many people have lost their jobs and are still unemployed or have had their hours or their pay reduced. And confidence in the economy remains quite low. Furthermore, household net worth, which fell substantially as real estate and stock prices dipped, remains well below its previous peak compared to disposable income. As a result, households have been saving more of their income. The personal savings rate, which rose to about 5.5% at the end of 2009 from a recent low of slightly above 1% in 2005, seems headed even higher in the third quarter. What's happening is that households are deleveraging. They are paying down their debts. And of course, lenders have reinforced this tendency as they've tightened underwriting standards for consumer credit relative to the pre-recession standards. So the real question is, have households completed their deleveraging so they will soon spend more, or does the process have further to go? Although we believe that substantial progress has been made, it's hard to tell how much further this process has to run. For example, the share of after-tax income that families use to service debts and pay for housing has declined sharply over the past years and is now back to levels last seen in the late 1990s. That's encouraging. Households have cut the total amount of debt they owe. They're also refinancing outstanding debt to take advantage of the lowest mortgage interest rates since the mid-1950s. We expect, in fact, that the increased rate of mortgage refinancing will continue over the near term. This is important because it represents another means by which households can free up income for other uses. Now let's consider the slow housing recovery. Housing activity, both new construction and sales, remains depressed. On the construction side, total housing starts are running a bit over 600,000 per year in recent months, although we did get a little bounce in the data that came out this morning. This is up from where we were in the first quarter of 2009, but it's still an extremely low level of housing starts compared to the standards of the last 50 years. In fact, the rate of construction is so low that there's barely any net growth in the U.S. housing stock. One reason why so little housing is being built is that many existing homes stand vacant. We estimate that there is roughly 3 million vacant housing units more than usual, and more vacancies are coming on stream every day as the foreclosure process moves homes from families back to mortgage lenders. This stock of vacant homes will shrink over time when fewer homes are foreclosed upon and more of these homes are sold and rented, but that's going to take some time. On the sales side, even though low mortgage rates and falling home prices have boosted housing affordability to the highest level in 40 years, the current pace of sales is quite sluggish. Impediments to home sales include tight lending standards, a weak job market, and continued uncertainty regarding the future path of home prices. The large decline in home prices that occurred between 2006 and 2008 is also important. This decline reduced the amount of equity that owners have in their homes, making it difficult for people to come up with the funds needed to trade up and move into better homes. In addition, the steep decline in home prices put many families at risk of ultimately losing their homes to foreclosure. With lower home prices, many families now owe more on their mortgage than their home is worth. This means that they cannot refinance or sell their homes easily if they experience a financial crisis, such as a job loss or serious illness. Recent developments on delinquencies and foreclosures have been mixed. While RealtyTrack reports that foreclosure completions in the United States exceeded 100,000 for the first time in September, it's important to remember that the foreclosure is a lengthy process in most states. On the more positive side, our data indicate that in recent quarters, borrowers are becoming less likely to fall behind on their mortgages so that fewer households are entering the foreclosure process. At the same time, the major lenders have acknowledged serious problems in the processes that they've used to undertake foreclosures, and they've announced moratoriums on new foreclosures. Taken together, these developments suggest that the situation in housing is going to be uncertain for the foreseeable future. The Federal Reserve actively encouraged efforts to find viable alternatives to foreclosure, such as loan modifications. We also support due process and access to legal counsel for homeowners facing foreclosure, for instance, through legal aid programs. At the same time, it's important that foreclosures that properly comply with state and federal laws can ultimately take place, as this is a necessary part of the adjustment that will eventually lead to more normal conditions in the housing market. At present, the extent of the documentation problems and its wider ramifications are still uncertain. In conjunction with the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Federal Reserve is therefore seeking to establish the facts through a review of the foreclosure practices, governance, and the documentation at the major bank mortgage servicers. We want to ensure that the housing finance business is supported by robust back office operations for processing new mortgages as well as foreclosures, so that buyers of homes and investors in mortgage securities have full confidence in the process. We are monitoring developments closely in order to evaluate any potential impact on the housing market, financial institutions, and on the overall economy. The key role that housing has played during this recession recovery makes it a timely topic, I think, for this regional economic briefing. So let me turn now to regional economic conditions. Although the recession appears to have been less severe in much of our region compared to many other parts of the country, employment remains unacceptably high here as well. As attendees at previous regional press briefings may recall, New York Fed produces a coincidence economic indicators that help track the performance of the regional economy. Since July, these indicators point to recovery in New York State, particularly in New York City. But although New York City and New York State are recovering, elsewhere in the region, the story is a bit different. In New Jersey, although activity is no longer declining, there has yet to be a sustained recovery. New Jersey's economy essentially remains flat. An index produced in Puerto Rico by the Government Development Bank there shows that the pickup in economic activity there in late spring and early summer has petered out, and activity in the past few months has again turned down. Now let's look at jobs, which I think are really the key for people to truly feel the recovery in their own lives. I'm pleased to note that private sector jobs have continued to grow moderately across much of the region in the past few months, just as they have in the nation. Growth in private sector jobs, which is not affected directly by the hires and then layoffs from the census, signals that on balance, firms are expanding their workforces to meet their business needs. While state and local government job cuts have also cut into total employment, the fact the private sector is creating jobs is a good sign, and it's certainly a necessary condition for a sustainable economic recovery. The number of private sector jobs has increased in and around New York City, in northern New Jersey, and in some parts of upstate New York. The latest job market report for New York shows a continuation of the generally rising trend of employment in the state at a pace that roughly matches the nationwide growth rate. In New York City, employment has expanded at rates substantially above those seen in the nation as a whole. Since we last met, employment in New Jersey has expanded, and while the growth has been quite modest, it is an encouraging development. In Puerto Rico, employment reports continue to give mixed signals, showing the seesaw pattern that has yet to add up to a strong rebound. Despite these employment gains, employment in the region remains painfully high. In August, New York City's and New Jersey's rates were very close to the national jobless rate of 9.6%. The rate for New York State, which has been improving since the first quarter, is noticeably lower at 8.3%, but that's still historically very high. Puerto Rico, which has had a much higher unemployment rate than the mainland for the past several decades, has seen a modest decline in its jobless rate, but at 15.6%, still showing little evidence of sustained recovery. Now, today we decided to focus on housing at today's briefing for a very obvious reason. It represents the most important assets that many households own, provides a substantial number of high-wage jobs, and is also often a key driver of regional and national business cycles. So I'll start with a key observation. During this recession, the housing sector has contributed less volatility to our region than it did to most of the nation. We have, of course, seen painful losses of jobs, construction jobs, home equity in New York and northern New Jersey. This pattern can be seen directly in the construction center, where many jobs that were created during the housing boom were then lost as the housing market deteriorated. However, the good news is that our housing markets tend to be quite a bit less important for our economy because we are a relatively mature region. That is, we're not adding population as rapidly as much of the rest of the country. So housing construction, which tends to be very cyclical, accounts for a much smaller share of aggregate activity here than it does in faster-growing parts of the United States. In addition, some other good news is that much of our region was spared the worst effects of the non-prime mortgage boom and bust. There were generally lower penetrations of non-prime loans into our housing markets. In our general, our region shows better performance with fewer delinquencies and foreclosures. This pattern was particularly true across New York State, upper New York State. However, as can be seen in a chart that we'll show you later on the Fed's U.S. credit conditions map, there are still significant pockets of housing distress around the greater New York City metro area, especially in communities in the Bronx, Dutchess County, and Long Island. And indeed, we recently documented the severity of problems in Long Island in our recent Facts and Trends publication. Moreover, New Jersey had non-prime mortgage activity that was closer to the national average and now has more delinquencies and foreclosures than is the case for much of the rest of the region. As the uneven pattern of non-prime lending suggests, the situation across the region is hardly uniform. The housing sector fared better in upstate New York than it did in much of the region during the recession. In fact, the housing boom and bust largely bypassed upstate New York. Relative to upstate New York, most areas in downstate New York and northern New Jersey more closely tracked the national cycle. Sales activity and home prices ramped up during the housing boom, but then dropped sharply. More recently, over the past year, home sales and prices in the region have generally followed different patterns. Home prices have generally stabilized across upstate New York, with some parts, such as Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, even experiencing price increases over this period. However, home prices have continued to decline in the greater New York City area and New Jersey area. By contrast, the number of home sales have generally increased throughout the region over the past year, but the pattern has been very erratic because of various policy changes that have been implemented. In particular, the introduction, initial expiration, subsequent extension of the home buyer tax credit has introduced volatility as it boosted, slowed, then boosted sales again. With this tax credit now having had its final expiration, the recent rise in home sales that we saw across New York and New Jersey in the second quarter is likely to be short-lived. Now, I'm going to end with a few remarks about New York City's housing market. This is a very large market that stands out as very unique in many respects. Let me remind you of some of the key differences about New York City. Compared to the rest of the region and with the rest of the country, New York has an exceptionally large share of rental housing. About two-thirds of the homes citywide are rented versus about one-third for the United States as a whole. The market is dominated by multifamily structures, especially in Manhattan and the Bronx. When these units are owner-occupied, they tend more likely to be co-ops than condominiums. And as a consequence of that, they tend to have relatively low loan-to-value ratios. New York City has very high housing prices, as everyone, I think, in this room can attest, and long construction lags. Since the number of houses cannot adjust quickly, rising demand during the boom typically leads to rapid increases in prices and in unregulated rents. Eventually, of course, the amount of housing responds to those changes in demand and to those increases in prices. So how did the economic expansion and contraction affect the New York City's housing market? Well, for a mature city, the city saw an unusually strong boom in housing sales, construction, and prices. This expansion actually began in 1996 and continued even in the aftermath of the 9/11 attack. Since 2007, however, New York City's market has turned down. This decline started a bit later than the nation's, and prices have fallen less sharply. Now prices appear to have stabilized. This pattern can also be seen in the Manhattan rental market. After a long period of rising rents, the market weakened substantially from 2007 to 2009. But rents have rebounded moderately in 2010. Now, New York City has not been spared from the high rates of mortgage delinquencies that have been characteristic of this recent recession. Manhattan's delinquency rates are elevated, while they remain markedly below the national average. By contrast, the real pockets of distress, however, are more prevalent in the outer boroughs, all of which have delinquency rates above the national average. The relatively mild recession and the recovery in the city are lending support to both home prices and sales. Also positive compared with the rest of the city are the fact that the city's low mortgage loan-to-value rates leads to a very low share of homes with underwater mortgages. In other words, the value of the home is worth less than the value of the underlying mortgage. Nevertheless, several risks to home prices in this city remain. These include the ongoing completion of a considerable number of new apartment buildings, ones that were started towards the end of the boom, which are still coming on stream. Another risk comes from the slow pace of job growth, especially in the higher-paying sectors in New York City. Finally, during the boom, prices rose substantially faster than rents. So as a result, rents now look cheaper relative to buying, and this could exert downward pressure on home prices since renting has now become the more affordable alternative. So to sum up, after a recession that was milder than many parts of the country, the region is showing signs of a modest recovery in New York. but little growth elsewhere. The housing sector played a pivotal role in the recent national downturn. In the region, the fact that housing activity has a smaller weight in the regional economy helped to limit the recession's impact on many communities. Going forward, given housing's significance to the well-being of people in our region and beyond, the New York Fed will continue to focus on this sector as we monitor regional and national economic conditions. Thank you for your kind attention. I will now ask Jim Orr to provide more details on the current and regional economic conditions, and we'll take questions as a group at the end. Thank you.